As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It's Waiver Fridays, April 29th, as we close out the first month of this season. Derek Van Riper here with Al Melchior. We're talking about shallow league bats to consider, deep league bats to consider. We'll look for some pitchers as well. We have a prospect debuting on Friday that we might be interested in picking up in some leagues this weekend. So we'll talk about what to expect from him. We'll dig around through a few old names that have added a few new tricks and see if there's some longer term value there. And of course, we'll take a ride on the closer carousel at the end of the show to see if there's anything we can do in our never ending pursuit of saves. But Al, we start with bats and we start with shallow leagues, where I think Taylor Ward has become the player of the week from a fantasy perspective. He's jumped from being rostered in 19% of CBS leagues to 71% of CBS leagues. I guess the question really just boils down to, what kinds of leagues are you in where you're not considering picking up Taylor Ward, seeing the playing time that he's getting and the opportunity he has to lead off for an Angels lineup that at least at the very top stacks up 1-5 or 1-6 as well as just about any lineup in the American League right now?
Well, I don't think it's an automatic for me for 10-team leagues. And for 12-team leagues, I think you got to make a bid for Taylor Ward. But I'm not completely buying what he's doing. And I'm sure, I'm not the only one. And that's not to say that I don't think that Taylor Ward couldn't make a contribution in 12-team leagues. But with that trend that you just mentioned, no surprise that Ward is the most added player on both CBS and ESPN. So I imagine that in fab bidding this weekend, probably it's going to take a lot to win Taylor Ward. And I'm not really willing, particularly in 12-teamers, because that's really what you're talking about. I mean, he's spoken for already in the deeper leagues. In 12-teamers, I don't think I'm willing to go more than like 6% on Ward because this is above and beyond what he's done in the past. He's actually, one stat that if people read the waiver column or, listen to our podcast, they know I really like exit velocity on flies and liners. It really is a good indicator of power. And he's averaging somewhere around 90 miles an hour, which is actually really low on flies and liners. So I can't quite make that square with the numbers he's putting up.
Yeah, I look at him versus someone else that you put on the show sheet for today, Max Kepler, who was drafted in a lot of leagues, most leagues, I would say, back during March. And Max Kepler is rostered in a lower percentage of CBS leagues than Taylor Ward already. In leagues where both are available, do you have a preference, a strong preference for one over the other?
I have a preference for Ward. I think there's a lot more batting average upside there and maybe similar power. But Kepler, part of the reason I put him on the sheet and included him in the column this week is that the Twins have a fantastic schedule coming up. So they've got 4 games at Baltimore, 3 games at home against Oakland, where they are not projected to face either Montas or Blackburn. So, yeah, that's a pretty nice schedule. And Kepler's the one Twins hitter who I think you could add all into 12 teamers, going on waivers where other Twins, maybe you aren't able to get them, but Kepler should be available and one who could make a difference this week.
Yeah, it might not be a guy that stays on your roster permanently in more shallow leagues, but could have that short-term value with a maxed out schedule and a lot of good matchups sprinkled in there as well. So I think that's a very good call.
Yeah, and I want to add, actually, the Twins have a really good schedule, like, almost all month. Like, week after this, I think they've got the Astros. I forget who the other team is. But then after that, it's a really good schedule for the whole month. So just something to think of, too, maybe not ditching Kepler after just the 1 week.
The other Angels outfielder that's getting some love in more shallow formats, he's already rostered in most deeper leagues, is Brandon Marsh. And I think with Marsh, there was a lot more excitement from me back during draft season with him and Joe Adell than there was with Taylor Ward. I think I'm guilty of sort of assuming that when the Angels decided to move on from Justin Upton, they were doing it to play both Brandon Marsh and Joe Adell alongside Mike Trout in their outfield. And maybe I misread the situation. If it ends up being one where Brandon Marsh and Joe Adell are sharing a spot, Marsh is the lefty, so he plays more. If it's a straight platoon, and Marsh has the added ability to play center field really well, which also kind of pushes his playing time up a bit higher as well. Just looking at Brandon Marsh, what's your expectation for him now with Ward's emergence?
Yeah, I think that there's obviously, like you say, a risk of him being something less than an everyday player, but he's hitting really well right now too. So I think, you know, that's a good thing to raise too, in terms of a caveat for Ward, that maybe what you're seeing right now, especially if you do have regression coming, maybe his playing time isn't quite as secure. So I think, you know, all three of those players, that's a bit of a concern, but I think it's worth bidding, you know, a few percents of your fab budget also to get Marsh if you can, because he's brought the strikeout rate down, which is really critical for him, because as a line drive hitter, when you combine the likely high BABIP with a more moderate strikeout rate, suddenly he becomes a contributor in the batting average category. He gives himself more of a chance to steal some bases. It's a pretty good profile.
And it looks like the Angels are among the teams willing to run early on this season, tied for second with 14 steals entering play on a Friday. I believe they've racked up a few caught stealing along the way, too. So plenty of green lights in Anaheim right now bodes well for the chances of Brandon Marsh emerging to help us, at least as like a fourth or fifth outfielder in mixed leagues where available. I'd put Andrew Vaughn more in this shallow league conversation as well. I really like what he's doing so far. Plate discipline skills going in the right direction, making a lot of hard contact, and becoming an increasingly important bat for the White Sox with the injury to Eloy Jimenez.
I think Vaughn, more so than anybody that we've talked about so far, is a must-add everywhere. And granted, I mean, we are talking about towards the shallow end of the spectrum, because again, he's been picked up, you know, in lots of deeper and like 12 team type leagues. But I think, you know, 10 team, shallow 12 team, Vaughn needs to be everywhere, because with Jimenez out for at least a month and a half, maybe longer, playing time, I would hope, is not a concern at this point for Vaughn. And like you said, DVR, yeah, it's, you know, we're not even a month into the season, but it's at the point where you can start to take some of these improvements seriously. And the plate discipline, the contact skills, they're all looking much stronger than a year ago. And with somebody like Vaughn, you know, who was an early pick and was expected to have this kind of skill set, fairly or not, I take it a little bit more seriously when I see that development coming.
Yeah, and it's kind of borne out right now in the rest of season projections. I was looking at the projections for the Bat X. Andrew Vaughn projected for a 330 WOBA the rest of the way. That puts him in company with guys like Carlos Correa, Bo Bichette. I realize Bo Bichette's a legitimate first rounder in fantasy because he also steals a lot of bases. Carlos Correa doesn't run at all. But just to contextualize what the format, what the system is spitting out right now, for Andrew Vaughn, it's actually very good. So I'm with you. I think in those shallow leagues where he's still out there, he's absolutely worth picking up wherever possible, and worth the extra bucks too if you're playing in a fab situation where you can't just scoop him right up off the waiver wire. I was surprised to see that you had Patrick Wisdom on the rundown, because I am the permanent Patrick Wisdom skeptic, I suppose. Is there a schedule-related reason you like him? Is there something in the underlying numbers that's standing out to you? What gives you reason to believe that Patrick Wisdom can actually provide something as he continues to play a lot for the Cubs? But I see that strikeout rate, and it's too much for me. I can't convince myself that there's enough there.
Well, it's not schedule related because the Cubs have a 5-game week coming up, 2 against the White Sox, 3 against the Dodgers, facing pretty good starters all the way around. So this is more of a long-term play. I knew there would be an interesting conversation here. Yeah, I know that you're a skeptic. I've been a skeptic too, but the way I led off the waivers column this week is, and I'm paraphrasing myself here because I don't remember exactly what I wrote, but something along the lines of how many strikeouts are too much? And with Wisdom, yeah, he's creeping up on 40%, but he's not striking out as much as Joey Gallo. And you think about the trade-off that a lot of us made, even in shallow leagues, to get Gallo's power, to get his on-base skills, and know that you were going to get a lot of strikeouts and you weren't going to get batting average from him. Right now, Patrick Wisdom is profiling very, very similarly to a good Joey Gallo, which you're not getting yet. So he's walking more. He is hitting with more or with greater exit velocity on flies and liners than anybody else with, I think it's at least 15 flies or liners combined. So that's a pretty low threshold, and he's still at the top of that list. So it's a question of, how much are you willing to sacrifice batting average to get right now one of the best power hitters in the game? And the other thing that you mentioned, playing every day for the Cubs, hitting in a reasonably high spot in the lineup, that you're going to get some run production with the home runs that are likely to come. And I think that's got some appeal even in 12 team leagues.
Yeah. I think third base is also not as deep as we're accustomed to. So maybe that forces you, if you're chasing because of an injury, to consider someone like Wisdom in a format where you previously didn't. I will still remain skeptical of this working, even though from a WRC plus perspective and a power perspective, he's held his own to this point, despite striking out just under 40% of the time since breaking through with the Cubs last season. I start looking a little bit deeper. There's one name that's going to be available pretty much everywhere because I don't remember anybody drafting this guy. Richie Palacios, who's up right now in Cleveland. And if you look at the schedule since he debuted earlier this week, the Guardians on Monday and Wednesday actually saw right-handed starters. And on Tuesday and Thursday, they saw left-handed starters. And we see a possible platoon developing here. But Palacios could actually emerge to be on the larger side of a platoon with someone like Oscar Mercado. And I think I can justify that. Now, fortunately, before weekly waivers run in most leagues, we'll get a few more games to make sure that Cleveland wants to keep him in the fold and that that's how they intend to use him. But I wonder if they've seen enough between 2019, 2020, 2021 from Oscar Mercado in the early part of this season to be comfortable moving him into a smaller role and to see what Palacios can possibly do at the big league level.
Yeah, it is shaping up to be that platoon type situation that would favor Palacios. But like you said, we have a few more games to see what sort of lineup comes out. But yeah, I think it's intriguing. I don't think you can expect to get very much power from Palacios, but stolen bases are a definite part of the picture here. Batting average, perhaps. So, I had some hopes for Mercado because he was hitting with a lot of power out of the gate, but that's all he was really giving. And I guess the Guardians, maybe they just, they want to see maybe a more complete hitter. But in any event, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I think if Palacios does continue to play over the weekend, that he'll be worth some bids in 15 teamers.
Yeah, probably because of the speed alone, I could see him becoming a 5% of your budget sort of player if things are looking good. Look ahead to the next week. There's only one lefty currently lined up to face the Guardians. They've got a 6-game week. If you're playing the NFBC where you've got the partial weeks, the lefty is Blake Snell. He shows up in the first part of the week. Then he gets 3 righties during the weekend portion of things. It is the Blue Jays, so he's got Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoah around the corner, but could be some opportunities for him to take that playing time and run with it. And looking even further ahead, they've got a series against the White Sox, they've got a series against the Twins, so a lot of righties coming up the week after that as well. So a clear watch list player for these next 48 hours, but someone that you could see popping to get some reasonable bids in deeper leagues in Richie Palacios. Christian Walker continues to come up as a oft available option on the corner. I'm surprised he's not getting added more often, Al. What's the problem here? I know the surface numbers have lagged a little bit for him so far, but the underlying metrics are really encouraging.
Yeah, and that's what I wrote about in the waiver piece this week. So yeah, my guess is that the problem is that he's hitting 157. And that is certainly going to change. That's very much BABIP driven. It's not like he's turned into Patrick Wisdom in terms of the strikeouts, but he is hitting for a lot of power. It looks, I mean, if you look at the profile, and again, you know, I'll probably keep saying this for at least the next couple of weeks. I mean, we are still dealing with fairly small samples, but right now that profile that Walker has looks very much like the profile that he had prior to 2021. So last year, right now, is looking like an outlier and not like the beginning of decline for Walker. So I think this is a great time to get in before that batting average does start to rise and it is going to be more costly in FAB.
Yeah, playing time remains steady. He's swinging less at pitches outside the zone right now, walking a bit more than he did a year ago. We know the power is legit, and I think some of the things we were worried about with Christian Walker also may have been health-related as well. Barrel rate early on this season up at 15.4%, so a huge bounce back from the 6.4% that he posted a year ago. Not surprisingly, with the barrel rate up, hard hit rate also up. They tend to move together. But a few other names that I think are pretty interesting. Someone sent us a message earlier this week. It was one of our listeners, Terry, who just sent Santiago Espinal, and the subject line was, Nando guy, question mark. So we talked about him a little bit on Under the Radar. Getting a crack at this lineup with any player and just getting the counting stats that can come along with regular or semi-regular playing time, I think does make a player like this interesting. Is there anything you see with Santiago Espinal that could make him a better pickup for the long haul than people realize?
Well, for one, I guess the most obvious thing is just that he's playing pretty much every day for the Blue Jays. So even though it's at the bottom of that lineup, pretty much wherever you slot into the Blue Jays lineup, I view that as a good thing. And he's still doing what he did before, which didn't really gain him much notoriety in fantasy, which is being a good contact hitter. But to that, he has added quite a bit more power. And prior to this year, he had 312 plate appearances. He had 4 barrels total. He already has 5 so far this year in 69 plate appearances. So, will this last? I don't know, but I figure at least in deep leagues, it's worth taking a flyer on Espinal just to see where that goes.
Yeah, I think he's the sort of player, if you were a few weeks ago maybe interested in Ramon Urias in Baltimore and you're not happy with how the season has started for him, you're looking at Espinal as someone who's in a better lineup, maybe hitting lower in the order consistently, similar skills, similar versatility, just might be going in the right direction. So I think that's the type of league in which you're considering Espinal at this point. I see Joey Wendell in the mix again. He's eligible middle and corner with third base and shortstop in a lot of places. I was worried that Wendell just wasn't going to play enough in Miami this season, so I don't have him anywhere, and I've mostly ignored him to this point.
Yeah, I had the same concerns. I did pick him up in one of my 15-teamers just on the chance that he would get into work his way into more playing time, and that's what's happening so far. And something I noticed, and I hadn't noticed it until I looked into it, just today, actually, was looking at the rotations in the National League East, and there are almost no lefties. There's Max Fried, there's Patrick Corbin, Ranger Suarez. That's about it. So that's a lot of righties. So even though Wendell, so far, I don't think he has made a start against a lefty, the Marlins haven't faced very many and don't stand to face very many, at least within the division. So if you get Wendell, you probably are getting something close to an everyday player. He's already got 4 steals and 4 attempts. That certainly can be a part of the package for the rest of the season, and a line drive hitter who can also help you with batting average and runs.
Yeah, you wonder too how fluid the top of the lineup might be. I know Jazz Chisholm Jr. is playing really well. You could hit Jazz second if you wanted to. It wouldn't make a big difference. Like, I just think if there's a path to a higher lineup spot, Wendell gets it because he hits for a high average. The OBP is okay because he walks a good bit on top of that, and maybe that's enough to put him in a more prominent role. But I hadn't really thought much about how few lefties there are in the NL East. That is a good point for a platoon sort of player like Wendell ending up with more chances than you'd expect as a result of those matchups. One other hitting situation that I wanted to throw at you today was Edward Olivares and Kyle Isbell both getting opportunities with the Royals, probably sharing a spot, which is tricky because it might not be a straight platoon. If it is, Isbell would get to play more as the lefty. We were all in the fantasy community hoping for a bigger opportunity for Olivares a year ago, and instead he was on the up and down shuttle between Kansas City and Omaha. So this is all the result of Adalberto Mondesi's torn ACL and Whit Merrifield moving back into the infield. How do you stack up Olivares versus Isbell and in their situation, kind of competing for time against some of the other outfielders we've talked about?
Well, yeah, I think that most likely it is a platoon situation, which goes against the benefit of both of them, but with Isbell probably getting the bigger half of that. I'd be more interested in him in 15 teamers. I mean, I just think, you know, he's really intriguing. And I like Olivares too, but I just, maybe it's just the past record TBR, but, you know, we've had so many hopes for him coming up and sticking in this lineup. It seemed like there weren't big obstacles and yet he kept getting sent down. So to me, maybe that does speak to the way that the organization views him. And so I don't really see making any movements this weekend on Olivares, even in, I mean, maybe AL only where he's available, but that would be the extent of it.
Yeah, that's been where I've kept my interest with those two players because of the time share right now. But they both do something interesting enough where if one could wrestle away a larger share of the job, I think they could play their way onto a broader radar of you know, mid-size or at least deep mixed leagues. I mean, Kyle Isbell's speed would play very well on plenty of rosters if he could find a way to overtake a larger share of that opportunity in Kansas City.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's shift the focus over to pitching, and we're going to focus on some guys that are widely available. There's a general question, though, that I wanted to answer. This came in on Twitter from Joe McHugh before we started recording, and this is happening in a few of my leagues because we're getting to the end of the first month. And people are getting impatient, especially in 10 and 12 team leagues, but even in some 15 team leagues with pitchers that have really struggled through their first three or four turns. You know, the ratios are bad. Maybe the K rate's a little bit on the low side. Joe wants to know when a useful but boring SP4, SP5 type gets cut in a 15 team league, is it worth an aggressive bid in the 20% range? Names that he threw out there as examples, he's thinking about like Eduardo Rodriguez, Alex Wood, Marcus Stroman, and I think at least one of those guys available in one of my 15 team leagues. And my immediate thought was 20% might be what it takes to get those guys in a 15. I think they're even harder to figure out in a 12 because sometimes the 12 team leagues have a lot of people like me who like to cling on to the players they drafted and they don't spend nearly as much as you think in fab. So how aggressive do you want to be on the pitchers that have disappointed so far when they do become available?
Yeah, well, those pitchers, in my opinion, should not be dropped at this stage in a 15-team league. So if they become available, to me, that's an incredible boon. And I think you do go aggressive. I mean, 20% to me maybe strikes me as a little high, but I could certainly see going, you know, 10 to 15 for somebody like Eduardo Rodriguez or you know, the others that you mentioned. 12-teamers, yeah, it's a little bit different because just Rodriguez comes to mind because I did have him in a 12 teamer last year and I'm pretty sure I cut him at some point. So I in 12 teamers, there is a lot more fluidity. There's a lot more replaceability on waivers. So I still think not out of April yet, I'd be loath to cut somebody like Rodriguez. But if he became available somehow, I think I'd be going in the 5 to 10% range in a 12-team league.
Yeah, see, I think I would at least for Wood, I'd probably push more to that 15 to 20% range in a league that size. I think he's, to me, the best of the bunch because there's more times you want to use him. I think because of the home park, especially, his floor is elevated quite a bit. I think Stroman, I'm more in on Stroman than most people, so my bid for him is not too far behind Wood. Erod is the one of the three that I'm most concerned about. I think getting out of Boston was a good thing for him as a lefty. You know, I think that was always kind of an uphill battle because of the monster and the advantage that righties have hitting in that ballpark. At the same time, we've seen this movie so many times from Erod. I think the fact that you remember having him out of 12 and having him go on and off the roster there, that gives you an idea of the type of pitcher he's been for most of his career. We know he can go through these stretches of, you know, a half dozen starts or even a dozen starts where he's pitching to a high fours ERA and a bad whip, and then he reels off a stretch of 12 starts with a 250 ERA and a 112 whip. And it's annoying because it just seems like he maybe falls out of sync or it's just something to do with his approach that causes this to happen this way. But I'm definitely Alex Wood first, Marcus Stroman second, Eduardo Rodriguez third, if you happen to have guys like that available, whether it's a shallow league or something a bit deeper. And I think you can be aggressive because we talked about this a few weeks ago. This is a great point that you made that's really stuck with me. I don't think we're going to have a lot of big name prospects coming up. We have one we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But the Fabapalooza that we're used to having, you know, a week or two from now, it's probably not going to look quite like it did in past years because we had Spencer Torkelson and Julio Rodriguez and a lot of players and Bobby Witt Jr. all debut to begin the season with their respective clubs instead of having the let's wait 3 weeks, let's wait 4 weeks and then promote these players. So I think it's okay to be a little more aggressive when players you feel should have been rostered all along actually do become available. When the mistake drops or the force drops occur, take advantage of those opportunities. But the prospect I'm referring to, of course, is Kyle Bradish. He will debut on Friday night, so we have not had a chance to see him yet at the time of this recording. If the schedule holds up, his next turn would come, I believe, Wednesday at home against the Twins. What are you doing with Bradish, comparing him to some of the other shallow league pitchers that might be out there and thinking about your own advice and not having a lot of opportunities necessarily to throw chunks of fab at exciting players getting promoted?
Well, I'm really not looking at Bradish yet in 12-teamers, and I guess partly maybe you look at the room over the weekend, you look at the roster trends on ESPN and CBS and see how much, and also look at Bradish's start on Friday night against the Red Sox too. I think you know that's going to shape where I'm looking to add him and how much I'm looking to bid. So the recommendation that I gave in the column was 4 to 5% in 14 and 15 team leagues. So that's not really quite following the guidelines that maybe I set out, and maybe that's just a reflection of that. I like Bradish, but I don't certainly view him on the level of like Grayson Rodriguez. So I want to, you know, make a bigger splurge when Rodriguez comes up, and I don't think it's going to be that long. So yeah, we'll see. If he pitches really well on Friday night, that 4 to 5 probably does go up at least a couple percentage points.
Yeah, that's sort of the baseline of what you expect, and you have to salt to taste based on how good the first start looks, how the stuff plays. I think with Bradish, I'm looking at the projections right now. These are the rest of the season projections from the bat. 83 innings, I mean, that could obviously be adjusted accordingly. About a strikeout per inning, looks like a 139 whip is expected, which is, to me, what you're looking at with someone that you would probably move in and out of the lineup, especially being in the AL East, right? I mean, even if Camden Yards is going to play a lot more neutral than it has in the past, you still have to be careful throwing guys like Kyle Bradish against the Jays and maybe against the Red Sox and probably against the Yankees, at least on the road. So there's going to be some times where you're playing it pretty safe with him, but this is a good enough projection. When you look at the other names that have similar ratios, they're guys that are consistently rostered in 15 team leagues. And some of them are guys like Spencer Strider, who people like me have been trying to hold on to for the last couple of weeks, hoping for a rotation spot. At least Bradish begins his big league career with that opportunity in hand. So I'm with you on the 5%, and I think we could easily bump that up just based on what we get to see in his debut. Numbers at AA, showed improved control, or converts at AAA showed improved control compared to what we saw at AA last year from Bradish as well. Tiny sample, but certainly encouraging. So I just want to see the command and the control too. Is that actually there? Is that problem that he had a season ago actually fixed at this point? Christian Javier might be out there in some shallow leagues. If he is, he's probably my favorite pitcher available. I think this is one of your last chances to scoop him up. Matchup coming up this week is home against Seattle. It's mostly a two-pitch mix, even though he has four pitches he can throw. But I look at Javier as a guy that probably gets used in an optimal way by the Astros. I don't think they're going to overexpose him. It's kind of like the way we talk about Rays pitching. I just trust that Houston's going to do the right thing when it comes to putting Christian Javier in positions to be successful.
Yeah, I agree. So for that reason, I think that you have to be, first of all, I think you do try to get Javier where you can this weekend. He may be available in a few deeper leagues, but we're mostly talking about 12 teamers here. And so you grab him even in those formats, but you just, I guess you don't do it if you don't have bench spots. But if you do have a bench spot, I think that Javier is a priority for those, because I think when he does get to start, he's going to be really effective. And if we're talking about leagues with dedicated RP slots, he could be one of the most valuable SPARPs out there this season. So it's a little bit format dependent, but yeah, the skill set's fantastic. So I think he does merit a really patient approach.
I think behind the likes of Bradish and Javier, it's much more open in terms of the pitchers you'd be thinking about adding in shadow leagues, and how long you want to add those pitchers, obviously, is a matter of how your roster is constructed in many cases. Glenn Otto is the name that Eno brought up earlier in the week. He suggested 12-team mixed leagues were a possibility for him. There was an AL-only league I play in where Otto was available last night because we have Thursday night fab, so I was surprised that he was only 5% of my budget to get. I didn't bid aggressively because I didn't really have a need, but hey, you can never have too much pitching stashed away on your bench. I actually think it's going to take probably closer to 5 to 7% in a lot of mixed leagues where Otto is available. But do you believe that there's enough here for Glenn Otto to be consistently viable in more shallow mixed formats? Is he someone that deserves a roster spot in a 10 or a 12-team league if he's still available?
I'm sort of in wait-and-see mode, but that's dangerous because I think he is the sort of pitcher who, given what the peripherals are and given that, you know, in our community, people see those same peripherals and might, like you said, you know, bid 7% or so just this weekend. But I do have some doubts about Otto's viability in 12-teamers, but anything deeper than that, he is out there. I'm very surprised he's available in your AL only. I wish that were true in my AL onlys, but anywhere deeper than 12 teams where he's available, I didn't recommend 7%, but I don't really have a problem with it either.
I'm looking at the schedule too. He's at Philly for his next turn. Tough matchup in a tough park. Just had one against Houston. I know the Astros don't have Jose Altuve right now, and he pitched reasonably well in that spot. Actually pitched very well. If you skip ahead to the following week, and if you're playing this game where you're trying to get two start pitchers a week early because you've got room on your bench, Glenn Otto would be a two start pitcher the week after this week. He's got the Royals and he's got the Red Sox, both of those starts at home. So I think you'd want to try and make sure you get him for that at the very least in more shallow formats if your roster is flexible enough for that. I'm intrigued for sure. And I just think there's a path for him to keep a spot given the needs that they have for quality innings right now in that Texas rotation. I think the next guy I wanted to bring up is one of the most difficult players for me to trust because I thought I had him figured out. And it's Jake Junis. Right now he's working kind of in a bulk role for the Giants. I mean, they've thrown an opener a handful of times already this season. Junis, schedule-wise, would line up to face the Dodgers on the road and the Cardinals at home. So this is going to be a great test. He's got a new pitch mix featuring a changeup. So it's really a lot of sliders and changeups for Junis. So far, so good. But are you buying this anywhere right now?
Not really. I am a skeptic. And with the new pitch mix, maybe this will, you know, turn out to be just another gear for Junis. But, you know, I'm also looking at the fact that the two appearances that he's made as a follower behind Sam Long were against the Athletics and the Nationals. Those are pretty favorable matchups. So over the longer term, I have questions about how those numbers are going to hold up. I have questions about what Junis's role is going to be. So I'm actually a little bit more interested in Keegan Thompson, who's putting up really good numbers in a kind of a similar role. And I feel like there's a better long-term path for Thompson to actually get a rotation spot.
Yeah, I think this was a interesting thing that came up on Under the Radar earlier this week. Ian brought up Keegan Thompson as someone who was really kind of catching his eye for deeper leagues. And what's the cutoff for guys like this who don't have a spot now, and maybe they don't have the filthy stuff that someone like Spencer Strider does? And, you know, we talked about Ronzi Contreras before he got sent down and some people were trying to stash. These guys in the early season, these glue guys, like I felt like a big part of what made Keegan Thompson effective to begin the season was just that the makeup of every roster, having more players on it, having guys who weren't as stretched out because of the shortened spring training, it really opened the door for bulk relievers to be valuable in ways that I should have anticipated, but I just didn't really position myself to leverage. I was aiming for just regular starters that I could trust more. And maybe in deeper leagues, that's a correction I can make, but I think it's still really difficult to know how valuable someone like Thompson or even someone like Junis could be in a more shallow format.
Yeah, well, you know, with somebody like Strider, who we've talked about, you know, pretty much since the first week, you see the obvious appeal there. But I think that's, you know, with 2020 hindsight, we can say, oh, well, maybe we should have been targeting bulk relievers more. But I know, you know, as somebody who has been impressed with Thompson in the past, I mean, I wasn't really expecting him to have any kind of significant role this year, and I didn't know how well his stuff would hold up against major league hitters. Jake Junis, like you said, you know, we've seen him enough to think that we knew who he was. So it's kind of hard to project these things 1 or 2 weeks into the season now that we're getting close to a month in. You know, there's still an opportunity, and we have more information on which to make these decisions. So I think now's a good time to try to roster somebody like Thompson or Junis. And again, my preference is for Thompson because I do see that opportunity for him to continue to have a prominent role or maybe have an even more prominent role down the road.
I'm going to roll the dice on Junis instead if I have to only take one. I think you're absolutely right. You could see Keegan Thompson being in the rotation in August easier than you could see it with Junis, given the way these two teams are built. But I actually think with Junis, that change is pretty nasty. And I think he went from being a guy that had one good pitch and nothing else to probably two good pitches and still a shaky fastball. It just seems like the Giants know exactly what buttons to press to make him as viable as possible. I think they're both sort of get through the week, get through the month sort of pitchers. They're not necessarily guys you're all that excited about for the long haul anyway. Gather that extra info, make that longer term decision maybe a week or two from now if you're able to do that. I want to know, are you buying Chris Paddock's adjustments as we're looking at players that are actually pretty widely available? Chris Paddock's available in about 65% of CBS leagues right now. I imagine he'll be a popular streaming option in shadow leagues, though. He's got Oakland at home for his only start during the upcoming week, and they've made a couple of adjustments with Chris Paddock this season. He's always had good control, still showing that early on here this season, but Chris Paddock's, despite the fact that his fastball velocity is down, he's throwing it less. So we're seeing more curveballs and more changeups in the overall pitch mix. I like that change. Is it just a streaming opportunity, or is there something more there with Paddock?
I really do think there's something more there. And obviously, it's a great streaming opportunity. We'll also get the chance to watch Paddock pitch on Sunday against the Rays, which will be, so far, one of his tougher matchups, actually. So I certainly want to be encouraged to see how he does against a team that's sort of in the middle of the pack offensively, as opposed to the Royals and Tigers, who he's faced more recently. But, you know, what's funny is DVR, that you know, you're referring to the adjustments that Paddock has made, and yet the end result is a profile that looks exactly like the Chris Paddock of old, with a decent swinging strike and called strike rate and pretty good ability to also manage contact. So, you know, if you like the Chris Paddock of, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, then I think you should like this Chris Paddock, even though the pitch mix is a little different.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think at the very least, take a chance on him for this matchup against Oakland. Even if things don't go all that well against the Rays, he might be a temporary solution for you in more shallow formats. But I like the skills, and the only reason I was bailing early in draft season is because I was worried about his arm health. So far, so good on that front. So I think he can actually help quite a bit. Twins looking good to begin the season as well. So the team context might be a tick better than some of us expected even, you know, a month ago. at this point. The other guy I wanted to bring up as kind of a fringy shallow league option, he's available in a lot of leagues because I think people are still afraid of Orioles pitchers. It's Bruce Zimmerman. And Bruce Zimmerman's a two-star pitcher this week. He's home against the Twins and home against the Royals. What are you doing with Bruce Zimmerman in leagues where he's available?
I may be sliding through a 1% bid in 15 teamers. I'm sure that's not going to get Zimmerman. I really struggled with this one, DVR, because the peripherals are actually, they're legit. Not a 0.93 ERA legit, but, you know, they look pretty good. But as a guy who's, you know, he's a soft-tossing lefty who hasn't really had a lot of success previously, I just want to see more. And it means I'm going to wind up probably waiting too long, but I just could see this going very badly.
On the surface, that's what I thought too. And then I saw some of the numbers come out of the pitching plus model that Eno has, and it's pretty good. It's above average in terms of location. It's above average in terms of the overall number that the system spits out. It's below average in terms of stuff, which is not surprising for a guy that doesn't throw particularly hard. But this might work. He's got four pitches. We were just talking earlier about Camden Yards not being the hitter haven that it has been in the past. So I think the streaming potential is a little bit greater. The same things we mentioned in passing, talking about Kyle Bradish, would apply to Zimmerman. It's going to be a while before you trust him in some of those really tough AL East matchups. But I think this is a spot where you're avoiding the AL East entirely. Yeah, the Twins are good, but I'll take my chances with Zimmerman at home against the Twins in the first start in a weekly league, but I'm also getting the Royals as part of that two-step. So I'm in for him as a temporary ad, at least in shallow leagues. I know in some deeper leagues he's already scooped up, but I think this is actually a two-start week that you can jam in there for some of the smaller leagues that are out there.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
If we start looking a little bit deeper, medium-sized league streams, you've got Chad Kuhl in the mix this week. I was stunned to see his name on the rundown. What do you see in Chad Kuhl right now?
If you just look at kind of the first level peripherals, you don't see a good strikeout rate or a walk rate, but he has been, you know, very, very stingy in terms of allowing hard contact. And the slider has been really effective so far. He's got a whiff rate of 32.5% on the slider overall. I think the whiff rate is above 15%. You've got the usual caveat with Rockies pitchers, but this weekend he's got the Reds. They're the worst offense in baseball right now. So, I mean, if it doesn't go well there, I'm probably not going to make any bids at all. But if that goes all right, then he gets the Diamondbacks, who actually ranked 29th in WOBA. So, you know, that's not really a tougher matchup than the one that he's got this weekend. So, I'm looking at Kuhl in deeper leagues because he's a Rockies pitcher, because those first level peripherals are not impressive. I could get him with a sub 1% bid, I think, in 15 teamers. And if he really is getting the swing and miss and continuing to keep the ball in the park, you've got somebody that at least you can stream off of your bench.
Yeah, I think on the road for a stream in a 15 plus team league as a contingency bid, that's the sweet spot for me. I don't think I'd keep him on my roster for home starts. I think he's just a chuck and duck. No, that's softball. He's just, yeah, he's one of those guys pitch on the roster temporarily. Pitch and ditch. That's the old fantasy 411 expression, the pitch and ditch. I think that's what Chad Kuhl is on the road right now, especially against the D-backs. Not an offense that we fear right now. I think the other guys that I put in the medium group are clearly ahead of Kuhl for me, so I get the sense maybe they are for you as well, just based on the way you were describing him. Drew Smyly catches the White Sox at home. It's a dinged up White Sox lineup, as we mentioned a bit earlier. And then Adrian Hauser, who gets a home start against the Reds, who have been the worst offense in baseball so far. I don't know if the Reds will continue to be the worst offense in baseball all season. I think there is some correction there. But when I continue to pick on them with lower end starters, I am much more likely to take those chances when that lesser skilled pitcher is doing it at home, not at Great American Ballpark. And that's the case for Hauser. So I think I'd probably put Hauser in at the bottom of the list ahead of Kuhl. And I'd probably have Smyly ahead of both, because I think Smyly might have the most long-term value of the three.
Well, I agree with putting both of them ahead of Kuhl. We've talked about in past weeks about Drew Smyly not being in my circle of trust. He's there now, even though he's still given up a lot of home runs so far this year. But I certainly trust him against the Reds. So I think I would go Hauser over Smyly, because if nothing else, you know that Hauser's going to get a lot of ground balls, can limit the damage that way. But they're both good streaming options.
As far as the deeper streaming options, none to start variety. I had Carlos Hernandez flagged as someone that stood out to me on the road against the Orioles. Again, park's a little more pitcher friendly than it has been with the adjustments they made. And I think Hernandez was starting to figure some things out in his most recent outing. Finally got through five innings against Seattle. It wasn't a gem by any stretch of the imagination, but he was one of the few Royal starters that I actually liked at the beginning of the season. So I think he's streamable, at least in a 15-team league. I don't think you have to pay a lot to actually get him on your roster. I don't know if he's going to stick around on my roster beyond this turn. And then there's Kyle Freeland, right? If you're looking at Chad Kuhl, I'm going to have to ask you, are you also looking at Kyle Freeland for the deepest of leagues where you're streaming?
No, because whereas you can find something to like in what Chad Kuhl has done so far this year, you have to dig a little deeper, but you can find it. Kyle Freeland's been a source of frustration for me because he's somebody that I've drafted in several deeper leagues and I have yet to start him. And that will continue to be the case this week. And I'm not going to be looking to add him in other leagues where I don't have him.
All right, let's move on to some other two-start pitchers. I mentioned one earlier, Bruce Zimmerman, being kind of a clearer, shallow league consideration for me. So 12 teams or less, I would even consider using Bruce Zimmerman if I'm looking for volume. These other names, I think, are more for 14 and 15-team leagues. Maybe Al can argue them into a lineup or two for a 12-teamer. I've got Michael Pineda, home against the Pirates, road against the Astros. Ross Stripling, home against the Yankees, road against the Guardians. And Michael Wacha, home against the Angels, home against the White Sox, all clustered together. And that's the order that I prefer them as streamers right now. I think because Pineda has the easiest of any of the starts that those three guys have, getting Pittsburgh at home for the first part of his two-step. All of those have some risk cooked in for sure. Are you messing around with any of those three where you're looking for innings?
The one who I'm actually the most interested in is the one who, from a matchups perspective, has the most risk, and that's Ross Stripling, just because I like what he's done so far. And I'm very impressed by the fact that he hasn't given up a home run, because that's been the one sore spot for him the last couple of seasons. So the strikeouts are down, but some of the underlying indicators suggest that there'll be more strikeouts, or there should be more strikeouts. So I actually trust him more against tougher opponents than I do, say, Michael Pineda against lesser opponents. So I at this point, I'd rather just play, make the play for the pitcher I like better than look at the matchups.
Yeah, I think if you're trying to play the longer game, I understand the interest in Stripling for sure. So consider that a tiebreaker, maybe, if you're looking at all three of those guys out of Pineda, Stripling, and Wacha. There's a deep league two-start pitcher that I pulled out of the high-risk group, Bryce Wilson, because the matchups are just that good. At Detroit, at Cincinnati, I was just saying a few minutes ago, I'm not always looking to start a lesser-skilled pitcher at Great American Ballpark, this being a two-start week, that's where the exception comes in. You're also getting a turn against the Tigers. Is there enough to trust with these matchups with Bryce Wilson in a 15-team mixed league, at least? Even if he's not necessarily on the 10 or 12-team radar, are you considering him for those deeper mixed formats?
Probably not, but when you're talking about 15-team mixed leagues. And, you know, if you're down a pitcher or two because of injury or, you know, just somebody that you can't trust anymore, i.e. Kyle Freeland, I would consider Bryce Wilson just for those matchups, but only because of those matchups. So it would be a pitch and ditch situation. It would be that kind of situation where it's like, I just needed some innings. Beyond that, I really don't have any interest.
All right, so Bryce Wilson is basically the two-start version of like a Chad Kuhl.
I think that's fair.
All right.
Well, I like the profile for Kuhl a little bit better. I actually do.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. I just think the volume here makes it challenging. Where if you need to chase some innings, you probably have to go with Wilson. Wilson's skills scare me. These matchups are the only thing pulling me in, and I'm already nervous because I've got Yoan Adon going in a 15-team league. I think he's got the Giants on the road tonight. I'm just hoping for a cool, damp night where the ball's not flying in San Francisco. I don't think by skills this is going to work out for me. I think it's going to be by weather only. Maybe we're hoping for something similar with Bryce Wilson in that two-step. I dropped a bunch of high-risk guys in the list. Tell me if I'm wrong about any of these guys. I have no interest in Ryan Yarbrough as a possible two-step. It's probably because the workload might not be there. At Oakland would be great as the first part of it. At Seattle, it's a passable second matchup, but I think if you're not going to get enough innings from him, it's not worth taking on the risk. Vladimir Gutierrez, who I think is probably similar to Bryce Wilson, right? If I'm willing to even consider Bryce Wilson, I can't completely dismiss Vladimir Gutierrez based on matchups. At Milwaukee, home against the Pirates, but the problem is he's struggling with walks and he's getting rocked. Vladimir Gutierrez has made 4 starts so far this season. He has not completed 5 innings in any of those starts so far, so I've been trying to avoid putting him on the bottom of contingency lists as a result of that. And then you've got Jake Odorizzi, who I used to like. Projections liked him for a long time. Home against Seattle, home against the Tigers, that theoretically should work, but I'm scared by what we've seen from him to begin the season. And then Dakota Hudson at Kansas City, at San Francisco. This one's actually more of a pitching model of spook for me, where I look at the numbers there. I can't get on board with Dakota Hudson, even though I think people might be interested in bidding on him this weekend.
Well, of the 4 that you mentioned, I would by far be the most comfortable with Hudson. And I think I'd actually be much more inclined to go with Hudson than Bryce Wilson, even though the matchup with the Giants definitely makes that a tougher road for Hudson. But yeah, I'm with you on Yarbrough. I really was strongly considering including him in the column this week, but then I looked at, you know, the fact that the last rehab start, I think he went 2+. Mm-hmm. So yeah, what's that going to get you even with a 2-start week? Not worth the risk there. And yeah, Gutierrez and Odorizzi, just that could just be a spectacular fail. So could really set you back in just 1 week with either of those pitchers. So for me, I'm left with Dakota Hudson here.
Yeah, I based on results, I think you can quickly move Hudson up. I just think there's a possible collapse coming from him. It looks so good on the surface. I'm worried about the walks in particular. He doesn't miss a ton of bats. It just seems like it could go wrong for you so quickly with Dakota Hudson, but it's a good defense behind him. I know he gets a ton of ground balls. That bodes really well. So maybe it's just being rational that he fits where he's at so well. And these are pretty pitcher-friendly environments for the road, too. A lot of times Dakota Hudson is appealing because St. Louis is such a pitcher-friendly environment. KC and San Francisco is certainly not bad if you're going to take a chance on him. So of the high-risk guys, I think you've got it right. I think he'd be the one of the 3 that I'd actually consider. I'm not considering Ryan Yarbrough at all. I just wanted to mention him because he'd pop up on some 2-start trackers. Let's get to closers. Are we looking at a committee in Houston now? Is that what's happening until Ryan Pressly comes back?
It would seem. And so it's a situation I'm avoiding because it doesn't seem like there's a clear closer temporarily, and the situation is temporary. So that's one I'm avoiding. And it's, you know, it's a tough week if you really do need to try to add to your future saves. Jorge Lopez is out there in some shallower leagues still, and I like what he's done so far. And he definitely has that job to himself because no other Orioles reliever has a save besides Lopez. But beyond him, there's really not much to see.
Yeah, I'm just stunned. In leagues where I've been trying to get saves, it's been tricky so far. I mean, we talked about Hansel Robles last week. We talked about Danny Jimenez in Oakland. He's still out there in about two-thirds of CBS leagues. I'm not convinced he's going to keep that job, but sometimes you just need to have the job for a little while, and that's all that we care about from a fantasy perspective. Are there any situations that you're watching closely? I mean, Minnesota still looks like a committee. No changes really on that front. I know Emilio Pagan was ticking up in terms of his roster rates. He's up around 34%. I think we talked about Andres Munoz earlier in the week on the Prospect Show on Tuesday, because the underlying numbers for him are filthy. So I could totally understand why you'd be interested in him as someone that could maybe be an upgrade over your last reliever spot. But any teams you're speculating on right now, anyone you've seen maybe a more established closer who hasn't looked good that you're wondering, hey, are they only one or two more bad outings away from possibly losing their hold on the job?
I honestly can't see a situation this week where, you know, like that scenario where you're describing where there's a clear reliever who could step in and be useful. So, like I said, if Lopez isn't available, I'm probably just taking the week off of trying to get closers this week. If anything, the Marlins situation is getting less and less clear. I think they've had four different relievers get a save in succession. I guess Cincinnati's a little intriguing because even though every time we talk about that Red situation, it's about how it looks so clear that that's going to go a bunch of different ways. But I think with Lucas Sims back, maybe there's a chance he gets enough saves to be relevant. So I guess if I had to make a bid on somebody, I think I could make a pretty modest bid on Lucas Sims and not risk a whole lot. But that's really about it.
Yeah, I saw Devin Williams got a save on Thursday for the Brewers. That was because Josh Hader had pitched on Tuesday and Wednesday, so he was unavailable that day. Wouldn't read too much into that. I mean, he's just the next guy up if anything were to happen to Josh Hader. I think that's the way to look at that situation. The other, Brian Thompson had his second save of the season. That's still an ongoing committee. You know, Andrew Kittredge is kind of a good closer three, but he's got closer one skills, Al. He could be really good if the Rays used him that way, but they're not using him that way. That Marlin situation you mentioned, it's a total mess right now. I took a few chances on Tanner Scott coming out of last weekend's FAB. He's probably going to be my most consistently dropped pitcher going into this weekend because it's still just a bunch of uncertainty. Sometimes those inexpensive bites of the apple, you know, sometimes you just have to keep moving on and looking for someone else. And I'm just surprised the Astros are going committee. I did not think they would go that route. I thought Hector Neris was going to be the guy with Presley out, and that has not been the case. Ryan Stanek picked up a save. Rafael Montero picked up a save. So another messy situation to sort through. And maybe if you are looking for some reason to be optimistic with the Marlins, maybe Anthony Bender is trending back in the right direction, but that one looks pretty messy as we've seen throughout this season so far. And a good point here, Edley in the chat. Of course, the Reds have to win games for their closing situation to matter. Yeah,
hard to argue that. I will agree with you though, DVR, that it's. I don't think the Reds. It wouldn't take much for them to be better than they've been, but they're better than they've been. So I don't think that's a completely hopeless bullpen situation, but yeah, that's a good point. Right now there's just not very many wins happening.
If you want to keep an eye on a pitcher who's pitching pretty well, I think right now Josh Winder could get a start soon, according to Dan Hayes of The Athletic, looking at the Twins rotation. Sonny Gray still making his way back from an injury, scheduled for a rehab start maybe Sunday, possibly Tuesday, so could be an opportunity for Winder in there. Might be more of a stream situation right now, but really good numbers in the minors from Josh Winder. So if he gets an opportunity, he might be someone we're talking about in a future week and someone we're excited about in a future week, which is nice. That is going to do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, you should get one. $1 a month at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. There you can read Al's weekly ads and drops column that goes up every Friday, usually around the time that this show is available. Always going to be some players we probably don't talk about there that you want to read up on. Definitely check that out. As always, you can ask us questions on the show when we're recording, 4 p.m. Eastern on YouTube at The Athletic Fantasies YouTube page. So be sure to jump over there if you have not been watching us live. If you have watched us live, thank you for doing that. And if you're listening to the podcast version of the show, take a moment to leave us a nice rating and review. We'd greatly appreciate that. Al is on Twitter at AlMelchiorBB. I am at Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast returns on Tuesday. Have a great weekend.